I once knew of a two-year-old child who was in a life and death struggle with cancer. I didn't know the child directly. He was a friend of a friend, the son of a friend of a friend. But his case struck me hard, and I began to include him in my prayers every day. Now, when I pray, I don't usually tell God what God needs to do. I figure God has a lot more wisdom than I do, and he knows what he needs to do. But this case was different. So I was telling God every day, this child needs a chance at life. You need to heal him. And so I prayed. However, eventually the cancer got the better of the child and he died. And we tend to say at that point that my prayers were not answered. And this can lead to some pretty dark places spiritually. It can have us thinking things like, well, it's my fault I didn't pray hard enough, or I didn't have enough faith. Or we begin to paint a dark picture of God. Well, God so loved that child, loved him more than his parents, and so God took the child from the parents. I've heard that. What a terrible, terrible picture of God. And what does it say about the parents? Today's gospel seems to lead us down this path. At first reading, it seems to tell us that if we just pray hard enough, God will grant what we ask for. But every one of us here knows that this is not always true. So what is Jesus teaching us about prayer this morning? Well, to get to this, you have to know what prayer meant to Jesus. There's a couple clues around that. The first clue comes from Jesus' own practice of prayer. Luke's gospel is especially emphatic that in the evenings, Jesus will go up on the hillsides of Galilee and spend hours in prayer there. We don't know the content of that prayer. Personally, I don't think it involved many words. I think it involved a communion that was so deep that it was beyond words. But this we do know. After praying through the night, Jesus came down every day and placed his life at the service of others. He came down off those hillsides and healed and forgave and welcomed the outcasts, gathered a community around him, a community of love and justice and peace. He was willing to take on all those structures of his society which tended to rob people of life and justice, like the unjust judge in today's parable. Prayer leads to service. The other thing we know about how Jesus understood prayer is when the disciples asked him, Lord, teach us to pray. And what did he teach us? Well, he said, pray. Pray that God's name is kept holy. Pray that in your lives, the holiness of God is manifested. Pray that God's will be done. That's interesting. Prayer is not about getting God to do our will. It's about getting us to do the will of God. Pray for the coming of God's kingdom. Pray for justice and peace in the world. Pray that we don't undergo temptation, that we aren't put to the test. And give us the bread we need. Give us the bread we need to live well for the sake of your kingdom. The prayer of Jesus isn't exactly the first place we think of when we think of prayer. Even today's gospel, if you read it closely, it's not about praying for everything we want. It's about justice. The widow was praying that she receive justice from an unjust judge. And Jesus says at the end, I tell you, he will see justice is done. So it's about more than just getting our wishes fulfilled. Way deep down, I believe prayer is meant to do one thing. Prayer is meant to break our hearts. Prayer is meant to break our lives. break our hearts and our lives open and make room for God to move in the hard situations that we face. And God will move if we open our hearts and if we open our lives. Really, there are three great promises God makes to us around which our prayer should be centered. The first two of those promises can be seen by meditating on the cross. And I'd invite you to just look at the cross there. Now, I recognize this part of the church can't see it, so you guys are going to have to use your imagination. But the rest of you, I'd invite you to look at the cross. And the first thing you see there is God suffering. And what that tells us is that there is nothing in our lives, no situation, no suffering in which God abandons us. God is with us right there in the struggle. The Apostles' Creed even tells us he descended into hell. There is no hell that we face where God is not with us and walking with us. We are never left alone in the struggles of life. The great promise God makes to us if our hearts are open is that God will be with us. The second thing you notice about the cross when you meditate on it long enough is that there aren't many options open to Jesus anymore. At most, he might be able to wiggle his toes and his fingers, but he's no longer even able to choose to move his arms. When you look at a painting of the crucifixion, everybody around him still has choices. They can stay or leave. They can pick where they're going to go to dinner. The one person who has very few choices left is Jesus. And yet he has freedom. He has the freedom to still choose to love. He has the freedom to still affirm life. He has the freedom to still give his life for others. There is not a greater example of freedom than the person hanging on the cross. And that is true of us as well. Whatever we may be facing, we can still choose to love. Whatever we may be facing in life, however hard it may be, we can still choose to give life to those who are around us. We still have our freedom to love and to give of ourselves for the sake of others. And if our hearts are broken open and the Spirit of God is moving through our open hearts, then we can still love. We can still give life to each other. The third great promise we proclaim in the Eucharist in a few minutes. I will, after the consecration, I will bow to the presence of Christ, and then I will say to you, let us proclaim the mystery of faith. Now, it's easiest to understand what we're proclaiming there in the old translation, which I deeply prefer. There it said, Christ has died. We remind ourselves that he is with us. But then we also remember and we proclaim Christ is risen and he will come again. Death does not win. In God, life always has the last word. And therefore, we can live through anything knowing that God is with us and we are free and life has the last word. I know that little child eventually lost out to cancer, but he was surrounded by love through that journey. His parents continued to be there for him. They did not run away in their sorrow and kind of hide from the events. They were surrounded by a parish community that supported them, loved them, kept giving them life. And so in the case of this two-year-old child, cancer won the battle, but death did not.